Off the Ball Rugby.
Pretty incredible. Only Johnny Sexton really could do this. So look, I know he was a de facto coach anyway. You know, I would imagine there's a few coaches out there whose noses are probably out of joint by this.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Koigig Podcast. Kathleen McNamee here with you to take you through all the action that is happening in the world of football, both here and over in England, where things are already sewn up going into the last weekend of the Women's Super League, which is a little bit annoying, but we shall talk about it anyways. And we also have new championship winners with a few Irish in their midst, with London City Lionesses getting their WSL promotion over Birmingham, which was a difficult day if you're an Irish supporter, because there was lots of things going on. But to look at that and everything else, I am joined by Karen Duggan and Scarlett Heron. And Karen, we might as well get the pain for you over with first.
Yep.
As Scarlett was saying, a moral victory for me at the weekend.
Yeah.
It's like a Rovers.
I'm so happy for you.
yeah, I'm very happy. Well, as I was saying to Scarlett, I was like, I don't think this has actually happened in the time that we've been doing the podcast. So, you know, it has been about time that I guess.
Well, we drew last year. We actually did draw last year, and I kind of referenced that in our pre-match speech, being like, let's not let that happen again. And we didn't. we went one step worse. I don't want to take away from Sligo's victory, because they deserved it, if I'm being honest. We have good talent there, but we are kind of, there's a lot of change going on and all that sort of stuff. And to be honest, we're 6 games into the league now, and we've played a cup game and we had a preseason game, and we're lacking consistency in terms of starting 11 style of play. And something was off with us on Saturday. You can just have days like that where, like, all of us, I would say, performed under par. There was no cohesion in the group, and Sligo capitalized on it. And that's the good thing about the league now, that is it, if you do have an off day, you will get punished. Obviously, we don't want to see it. You don't want to play crap and still come out with a win, because it doesn't do anything for the league. And it certainly doesn't do anything for us as we try to develop and kind of get back to where we were before. Because we do have the potential to do that. Obviously, it's going to be a struggle as money and stuff becomes a feature. But yes, Sligo, we're on it. Tactically knew what they were doing. Stood up to a physical element of it, and yeah, we're well worth their victory. Anything we threw at them, they were well able to answer. So there's a lot for us to take back to the drawing board. We had a long chat after the match. I think that's only kind of like start of a conversation with us. But it's all part of it. It's all part of like rebuilds and growth and stuff. And the league's a bit mad this year that we're still sitting in seventh, and I feel like we haven't even kind of started yet. Because, you know, everyone's kind of taking points out off each other in the middle part of the table. But great for Sligo. And like, they'd gotten a draw with Bows in the week previous in the All-Ireland Cup. And you'd like to see them progress. I think they have a lot of young talent. They've dealt with a lot of injuries really well. So fair play to them. But in terms of us, we let ourselves down in every aspect of that game. Technically, tactically, effort, everything. It was just one of those days where we completely let ourselves down. And you have to, that's part of it. It happens sometimes. And they're the kind of ones that keep you up on a bank holiday Monday when you're thinking about it, which isn't great either. I thought I was past those days, but
kind of don't think it still shows.
No, because I do care. And I still care, like, obviously, a lot about where we go as a club and as a team. And it was just kind of one of those sobering moments for us. But look, it's happened early enough in the season, and it's exposed a lot of weaknesses maybe that now we have time to address coming into, you know, summer months, a bit of All-Ireland Cup. And yeah, we probably won't be making a run for any title, but what we can do is continue to grow and continue to develop and look forward with the young group of girls that are there, because they are very young and there's new girls in and they're doing really, really well. We just need to bed down a style and a system that's going to work best for us. And unfortunately, we've gone too far into the season to figure that out a little bit. But it'll come. It will come.
I have every faith.
Hopefully. Hopefully it will come.
I will enjoy this victory.
Yeah. And you should. And Sligo should. And hopefully it's not the last that we see of Sligo getting points and stuff, because they have had a couple of tough seasons, and any, you know, they've lost kind of big players that they've brought in and stuff as well to local rivals. And it's always difficult when you have a big club, and especially what Galway are doing. It's hard when you've got other teams around you who can offer more and who are challenging and stuff like that. So hopefully, again, they can just kind of build from the ground up with young players and continue on that path and get a few more results to keep them afloat in this league, because we want to continue with 12 teams at minimum, you know, if we are to grow the league. And it's the bottom teams and the likes of Piemont and stuff that we're a bit at risk of that if we don't perform within the league.
Mm. Scarlett, Karen was saying there about the league this year, and you kind of have Athlone and Shells at the top, not running away with it completely, but you know, there is a significant enough gap between them and Galway. But then between Galway and Piemont and Bowes as well, I suppose, like, there isn't a whole lot of space there between those like four or five teams.
No, definitely not. And yeah, I think with the league only having two sort of rounds of fixtures, you only play each other twice. It's, if you lose two games, you're nearly out of the race. You're nearly, the title's nearly gone from you. Like, even I think Galway are playing Shelton this weekend, and after their loss, at the weekend against that loan, it's nearly like they're out of the race if they lose. Like, it's so concise, and you can lose the title very early on. Obviously, you can't win it in the first few weeks, but you can definitely lose it if you get off to a bad start. There's very little coming back from it. Obviously, yeah, there's two main cup competitions, which a lot of teams will probably target because of that. Like, as you said, that's kind of main two or three teams that are challenging for the league, and then there's kind of that bracket of teams who are there, thereabouts, but not really challenging. So I think it's good to probably have the two different competitions, and it was great last year to have three different teams win the three different competitions, and I think we'll probably see more of that this year. I think teams focus on the league, and then other teams would obviously, as I said, target the cup or the All-Ireland cup or whatever it may be. So I think that's good to sort of spread out the success a bit, and for the likes of Galway to get their first trophy 2 years ago. And then hopefully we'll have a new winner of one of the competitions this year.
And then to look at the kind of lower league as well across the water before
we... Sorry, Kathleen, before we move on, I hate to do it, but I do think we should address some of the officiating that was on TG Cahir.
Oh, yeah, fire away.
I just think at this level, for a goal that clearly didn't cross the line to be given, and then for
totally forgotten about
a
that.
Blatant potential red card challenge, or at least a yellow, and then it turning into a yellow for the opposition. I think it's terrible that it happened, but it's good that I think it started a bit more of a conversation. I saw a lot of people online kind of commenting on it, and I think it's good that it gets some focus and gets addressed. Not to take away from results or anything, but the last two league games we've played, we've had two onside goals given offside, and it's those fine margins when you're trying to develop. It's more so for teams like us who are trying to like claw and build and stuff, that those little results can have a massive mental effect if we go from potentially drawing a game to losing a game and stuff like that, when you're working so hard to try and build something. So I don't... it's terrible that it happened live on TV. I don't think it does much for a league, but I'm sure Scarlett, there would have been a lot going around your group chat and stuff like that about it, and people aren't surprised almost by it. I don't know what you think, Scarlett.
Yeah, and I think as well, like, even Phil Trill after the game spoke to Karen, like, if you're not, don't give it. And I think that's really the main thing. Like, see, the officiating in the league hasn't been up to standard ever, really. And I get that, like, our league, like, call a spade, it's used as nearly a training platform for referees, and then when they progress, they go up to the first division, the men's first division, and then the men's premier division as well. And I think that's an obvious sort of thing. That's no point in like putting a shadow over it or anything. And I think that's the same with the sort of offside calls. Like, we don't have VAR, we don't have like these replays on the big screens to help referees. If it's a tight margin and you're not sure, you like, it's hard to make a call on it. But I think with those sort of ones, you'd nearly give it if they're in line. Like, you can't be calling arms in this league because it's just too tight, and we don't have the cameras and the ref, the officiating to make those calls against teams. And yeah, I think there's massive room for improvement there, and it's been an issue across the league for years. And even with like the PFA coming into some of the teams this year, like that's their main focus as well, as the sort of the poor officiating that's been across the league. And it's small decisions, and to be fair, a lot of it is consistent in terms of it doesn't really affect the game because it's poor on both sides for both teams. But overall, like, it has to go up, definitely.
What's the remedy there, though? Because, like, we've already said, in terms of money, there isn't the money there to put, like, proper training structures into place or to give people the opportunity to, you know, dedicate themselves. Because, Karen, we've talked about this so many times on the podcast over the years, and the general sense is that you can't even really blame the referees because, as well, they're just not getting the right training and right education to be able to do their job properly. And I'm sure that's as frustrating for them as it is for everyone else watching it.
Yeah, there are people there that assess the referees and stuff. It's just what they do with that feedback needs to become more regimented, more consistent. And I don't care about money and stuff. If you want to grow our league and you don't want it to be a tick the box exercise, then no element of the game can be a tick the box exercise, be that the a referee assessment or anything else that we do in terms of club licensing and all the little loopholes that we have to go through. They should equally be holding themselves to that standard. So no, the time might not be there, but if you have someone there with the information that they've just taken down in a sheet, pull that referee to the side, pull that lines person to the side. We've got every single person has the LOI TV footage or whatever it is, clip it for them. Yes, you might say it's a time constraint, but it is somebody's job because we see them out being assessed. So it's somebody's job to do that. And I'm sure that the referees would be open to it. And again, I'm not, like Scarlett said, we're not putting all the blame on the referees. There's just more care needs to be given, I think, to that element of the game. If someone has had a poor game, like we have to go through video analysis when we've played poorly, and they should potentially have to do the same. And it could be a thing that if they've made a poor decision on this, here's a link to the rule. Here's a link to, I know that sounds very basic, but the more you're bombarded with information, the more it seeps in and the more aware you'll be of your role and your importance, like, you know, to the games and the outcomes of the games. And yeah, it's frustrating when you're on the opposite side of it, but Scarlett's right. We've been on the right side of it a few times as well. So it's consistent across the board. It's not like there's favoritism towards one club that you see opposition fans and stuff in like men's leagues and in England kind of claiming, you know, like Chelsea last week when they got the penalty against, or for them against United, people are like, oh, always Chelsea always getting penalties. It's not like that in our league. It's just random calls at times that you're just, it right, just leave you right. A little bit disappointed and baffled.
Yeah, and I think it is something that can be improved very easily. As you said, like there's simple things that need to be done, and like it's like anything in life. If you're a footballer and you want to improve, it's not just going to be the training days you have. If you're a referee, it's not going to be like the local training day the FAI gives you once a year. Like you have to work on your game as well. Because I'm sure they have aspirations to coach in higher leagues and get major opportunities in their refereeing career. Like I'm sure they do. They mightn't, but even if it is that case, then you need to work on it yourself as well. Like it's probably annoying for them that they don't have the care and the sort of attention put to them for training days and stuff like
and
that.
It's the worst job in the world as well. I always say like I don't know why anyone would do it to themselves. No. So I do like actually appreciate anyone who has put themselves forward and put themselves in this position. It's just that let's stop sweeping these instances under the carpet and let's kind of aim to add that as a key area of improvement going forward in the league in the next couple of years.
Apologies, I had a dress for a wedding arrived there, which is why I had to slightly run off. A wedding I'm officiating, so I feel like it was important not to miss it. But
this is great practice.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, I think you're both right in everything you've said there. And I wish that there was some sort of magic wand that we could change this, because it does feel like a repetitive conversation that we have at least a couple of times a season when it comes to officiating. Just to talk, give a couple of people their flowers before we move over to the WSL. Obviously, we had the news last week about Louise Quinn retiring from all football. A decision I don't think came as an absolutely massive shock to anyone around. Like, she struggled a lot with injury the last while. And she very nearly had an absolute belter of a way to go out at the weekend against London City Lionesses. But unfortunately, it wasn't to be, and they are the new champions of the championship. Scarlett, you messaged us at the weekend and you're like, it would be perfect moment now for Louise to get her final header and give Birmingham their big moment.
Yeah, I think it would have been the sort of fairy tale ending. But yeah, unfortunately, it didn't come to fruition. But it was a great game. Two teams that have been dominating that league, especially the last few years. I think the Wolf teams have always been there, thereabouts. And great for London City, obviously, to get the win. But yeah, I think it was, everyone was kind of hoping for that ending for Louise and for the likes of Lucy Quinn as well, who came on and played really well. But yeah, I think what London City are trying to do is brilliant. And even when you look at Michelle Kang after the game saying that they want to be a mid-table WSL side at best, they're not just there to go up, such as like say Bristol and Palace the last 2 years have come up and gone back down. They're going to try put more money into it and more funding and try bring in the calibre of player needed to stay in the league.
And Karen, wasn't to be for Louise, but a brilliant moment for another Irish player in Megan Campbell, who also hasn't had the easiest time over the last couple of years, missing out on World Cup, missing just generally from a lot of big moments for this for the Irish side anyways. But she was absolutely buzzing on television afterwards.
Yeah, and she's absolutely right to be, you know. It's an unbelievable feeling to win anything, but when you've overcome everything that Megan's overcome injury wise and missed out on things, and I feel like she's proven a point with London City. You know, people have written her off because of her injuries and stuff. We've seen her do this with Liverpool, and now she's done it again a few years later, showing that she's not done. And it's great for her, and hopefully it means that she continues to get a good run and minds herself, and she'll be part of that WSL squad that I'm sure will be massively revamped next year. That's the one thing about getting promoted. Sometimes like the people who get you there aren't the people who continue the journey. So they're right to just sit in it and enjoy that feeling. And yeah, I think fair play to them and fair play to Michelle Kang. And I think the kind of dynasty that she's building there with, you know, Leon and Washington Spirit, it's clever to do it in different areas because you've got different times of seasons. There's opportunities for loans of younger players and building from each other's academies and stuff like that. So I'm sure we'll start to see a little bit of crossover there as time goes on, but it will mean London City need to establish themselves a bit more probably in the WSL, which is going to be a huge ask because they're still a very small club in the greater scheme of things and where the women's game is going in terms of the umbrella under their men's teams and how it's grown in that way exponentially and how much easier it is to do it under that umbrella. So it's ambitious from her, but obviously it's great to see that level of investment. So you really would like to see it work, but it feels a little bit like an experiment.
It does a little bit, but then as well, the fact that she was able to attract someone like Aslani to the championship and kind of
investment.
Yeah.
She didn't come for free.
No, of course not. But also that she led to her that, you know, that she is going to keep building and that she has that background record of putting a lot of money where her mouth is, you know, and it's only taken those two seasons for them to go up. Like, I know Scarlett mentioned there about Kang saying that they wanted to be a mid-table team. Like it feels ridiculous in the moment, but also when you look at her record elsewhere, you're like, well, if you manage to survive one season, and that's probably all they would need to give a little bit of a boost on because she can spend whatever she wants then. Okay, Scarlett, you have pulled together a nice little team of the week for us. It's been a while since I've done one of these, so looking forward to it. Do you want to run through who is on it?
Yeah, we can do. So in goal, we have Sophie Bagley. We have a back four of Rebecca Knack, Karen Holmgaard, Elise Isolde Sevenich, and Sajik Nuskin. And then we have four in midfield. So we have Juliana Kankovic, Grace Clinton, Marina Caldente, Maria Hobinger. And then we have two up front of Rachel Daly and our very own Abby Larkin.
As much as I am... think Caldante is obviously amazing. I'm surprised any Arsenal player made it near this team after the performance.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking the same myself, but I just think that any sort of brightness Arsenal had came directly from her. She involved in both goals, great ball in for the first, and obviously a great, great strike for her goal as well. So, yeah, it was tough to fit an Arsenal player in, but I think she's just out in her own world in those sort of games. But yeah, I think Brighton were due a few entries into this week's team of the week.
Yeah, and for Bagley to have beaten out Courtney Brosnan shows the performance that they have. And you go online and you look at all the tweets, and I feel bad for Zinsberger, but like all of the tweets are like, imagine we had a number two who's like Bagley, like the importance of a keeper. And it's the area that I thought obviously Man United might be worried about after they lost Mary Earps, but Tullis Joyce has been absolutely key to them getting Champions League. So yeah, Bagley was absolutely the right call there. She, because Arsenal did have their moments, you know, they peppered a bit in the first half, but Brighton stood up to them really well. And it's not worrying, I guess, because they're not really focused on the league, but consistency and habits, and, you know, they'd want to be performing a little bit better in their last couple of games before they go and play Barcelona. So yeah, Caldente, yeah, I agree. She was the one bright spark there. And she's sitting in that midfield beside Kankovic. What a strike that was. Oh my God, what a strike. It's just one of those ones. It's going top corner. It's going out for a throw-in. And my God, she just met it perfectly. And she got a couple. Yeah, she was brilliant for them. One United player, Clinton, obviously brilliant, brilliant header. Just because of the enormity of the fixture, I probably would have put in Leah Galton, just because when that sending off happened and you've already been up and down the wing for that long, I just thought the amount of last blocks and tackles she was still putting in the 80 plus minute was really, really impressive. So apart from her, I think really, really strong team. Obviously good to see Abby Larkin getting on a score sheet, and Everton were kind of a bit of a talking point at the weekend, definitely, for sure. And over the last couple of weeks, there's been a massive improvement. Like start of the season, we were like, wouldn't be have been upset if they went down, but they've shown a bit about them.
Yeah, they really have. And also, I enjoyed how dramatic the ending was, even though, you know, we know what was going to happen in terms of the fact that they were able to like get the point that it was coming from an Irish person as well. It kind of, I think it helps give them a bit of a credence, I suppose, in the league, and a bit of credit, considering that everyone probably would have just like not paid that much attention to them for the last couple of games because of how the points looked on the table.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it was a bit of a damp squib of a weekend, really. Like it really was just all about the Manchester derby. Obviously, you were looking at Everton and Liverpool a little bit just because it was a derby. But again, you could tell that Liverpool weren't exactly going for a high up place, that they weren't playing for much. I thought they were quite disappointing as well. Whereas Everton are kind of riding a wave and they're building a little bit for next season. I think that Liverpool need to be a little bit wary of that, their consistency levels.
I think that Liverpool are the difference between fifth and ninth place is the last game. I think they can finish in any of those in between slots. And I think if you're a team like Liverpool who finished fourth last year and you're coming ninth, just shows, I know like Amber Whiteley's obviously not had an easy job coming in, but their performances in the last few weeks have been subpar, definitely, and really, really disappointing end to the season for them.
And like Chelsea at the weekend, who are going for an unbeaten season. They're very different mindsets going into that game.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Well, shall we look at that Manchester derby as a starting point for the other games? Just because it was kind of the one that had a little bit riding on it and ended up being very entertaining. But ultimately, 2-2 draw. Karen, I imagine the stress levels were high for this one.
They were, because Man City were the better team. And probably when Man City are on their game, they are as good as anyone, but they're leaking too many goals. And we've said it consistently over the last few weeks. If you go two up in a game that you have to win, you need to be a little bit more conservative. And first goal, like loads of space on the wing to get a cross in, and great Clinton, obviously great header. And then second one kind of caught on the breakaway. You don't need to be pushing that far up the pitch. You know, I just think a little bit gung-ho, a little bit naive. It's okay to not always play the free flow in football. Man United to watch in for most of that game when they went in a draw. It was horrible if you're looking at it from a footballing point of view, but from a tactical point of view and from a playing with passion and playing with pride and like put bodies on the line element, there's just night and day between Man United and City. And I think that's an ethos thing, and maybe City need to rein themselves in a little bit in terms of their defensive structures and getting that a little bit more solid, because 2-0 up at Old Trafford to knock Man United out of Champions League in a local derby, they shouldn't be letting that slip. They'd be kicking themselves.
Yeah, it has been a bit of a failure of a year for City Scarlets. Obviously, the goal is win the league. Then the second goal is always qualify for the Champions League, and that hasn't happened. They got rid of Gareth Taylor, but arguably that potentially came too late in the season to really make a difference. Nick Cushing came in, who did know Manchester City very well, but I feel like they've changed a lot in the time since he's been there, and he hasn't really been able to inject any sort of excitement into the squad. And then also you obviously had the whole issue with Chloe Kelly and her ending up at Arsenal and being really happy there and performing really well for them as well.
Yeah, I think there was just a lot going on. Like, as you mentioned there, there's a list of things you could point to sort of pin the blame on, I guess, for the sort of lackluster year they've had. Obviously, the Gareth Taylor departure came at a weird time, the week before the cup final, and then obviously getting knocked out of the Champions League as well just put a real dampener on their season. And ever since then, it's kind of been like, don't really have much else to play for. And obviously the last thing they did have to play for, they've ultimately let slip, and through a really, really poor game management point of view as well. And even when the red card comes, 20 minutes left, you have a chance to get a winner. And I actually laughed at, I think it was Carolyn, you can see in the background when the red card's shown and she's trying to lift up the crowd and get them going, bit of shit house through there. But yeah, just United defended really, really well and had their backs to the wall. But I think in terms of like 50-50 battles, and they won all their tackles, and as Karen mentioned, the players putting their bodies on the line and did exactly what they needed to do. And like, I think from a neutral standpoint, you'd much rather that Manchester United team come away with the Champions League spot, because I think they're just a more enjoyable team to sort of see succeed, rather than, I know Man City sort of have that name of, they've obviously a lot of money and a lot of finances, and you kind of want to see teams like United do well. But I think as well, just the fact that United worked so hard during the season and had such, played that, didn't play the nice style of football that City might have, but they did the simple things. They played that sort of defend first and then we can attack, and they had their solidity there. And I think to see them get a Champions League spot is really, really special for them. And obviously, if you're Man United watching on, as we were saying, you're sweating in the change. You're absolutely dripping in sweat, it shows. But no, I think full credit to United. But I think there'll be a lot of work in the off season done in City.
I think both now have to recruit very cleverly. Like, Man City need to do a big name signing to establish themselves again, saying, okay, well, we're still going to go for the league next year and we definitely will be getting Champions League. But obviously we're hearing that Alexandria is going to Barcelona now. So be interesting to see if there is an impact of players in and what they do because of our players out because they lack a Champions League football, and how City invest to kind of counteract that a little bit as well would be really interesting. Obviously, hands up as well, Man City, if they hadn't gotten all the injuries they did, they probably would have, not probably, they would have gotten Champions League football. But look, that's the name of the game, and Man United's defensive consistency was the winner for them this season.
To look then at one of the other derbies of the weekend, and Liverpool against Everton. Liverpool are one of those sides that are kind of close to becoming dangerously irrelevant when it comes to conversations, even about the future in terms of that Champions League spot, never mind, you know, trying to bust into that kind of top one or two spots, which for one of the biggest clubs in the world is incredibly disappointing. And I suppose to look at the opposite side of it as well, though, like Everton have done quite the job in turning themselves around over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think Liverpool, if they're to make a statement next year, it's keep Olivia Smith and sign 2 to 3 big name players of that caliber, like that she was kind of plowing a lonely furrow a little bit there in terms of like standout players and stuff like that. I think bolstering midfield and if just tidying things up, they, again, just giving away sloppy balls in midfield has been like a recurring theme for them. So yeah, they're just a bit off, and they never really got us excited this season in the way they had the season before when, you know, they were kind of beating those top teams and stuff. We never kind of felt that they were going to do that this year. So yeah, they're kind of on the that kind of interesting trajectory now where we'll see it can either slip very quickly or they can like the it's up to, I guess, investment. Like the men's have just won the Premier League. In a lovely, decent world, some of that gets paid forward into the women's game. But that remains to be seen. They're solid without ever. I'm not looking at this squad now and thinking, yeah, next year they'll challenge for Champions League or anything higher.
Well, if they lose at the weekend and Aston Villa, Everton, and West Ham all win, then they could be as low. They could finish the season ninth, having come fourth last season, which is an incredible disappointment for a team that we were kind of saying before at the start of the season could be the one alongside Manchester United to put a bit of
We also said
pressure.
it about Aston Villa,
I know, but we don't like to point out our failures too much. Okay. But like they just don't invest, like their squad is so small. There's like, you know, and there are, as you pointed out, like there are the bones of some exciting players in there and some exciting talent to build around. But even whenever they got rid of Matt Beard, it didn't really feel like that was like the solution to their problems. It was they
Oh,
needed
yeah, I
to
didn't think
invest.
that was the problem. I raised an eyebrow at that. I was like, is now the time? What will this actually solve? Whereas with Man City, you were kind of like, okay, well, something had to give. Arsenal the same, more so even than anyone else. You were like, okay, there's a decision that had to be made, and it ultimately proved the right one. And yeah, the Liverpool one just seemed strange because it did seem like a squad issue and not having enough players to bring off the bench to or to deal with injuries and stuff like that. So that's out of the manager's hands. Obviously, maybe he asked for investment. Maybe it was kind of more of a mutual thing. We don't know what goes on behind the scenes. But yeah, from like sixth to ninth, at different points of the season, we've talked about how disappointing they've all been. To sixth to tenth, really. But Liverpool have been the one that I suppose we're most disappointed by. But it can change so quickly. Look, Brighton were down there last season, and then they made a really good run at the start of the year because they brought in young new manager and made some investments, some really cute signings. And maybe that's what Liverpool need to do as well. Maybe it's even just leadership. Like obviously Neve Fahy, they're going to lose that from the dressing room as well. So might not be all on-field gaps that they need to plug. There's also an element of experience and bringing a squad together. So it's a big job, and I think you want to see Liverpool do well and compete in this league, given the stature of the club itself.
Definitely, Scarlett Ni or Karen mentioned it there about Neve Fahy announcing her retirement from all football as well, joining Louise Quinn in that club. How big a loss is that for Liverpool in terms of her leadership?
Oh yeah, it's massive, especially now in the sort of transition period they're going to have to go through to not have her as like a mainstay to bring in whatever new blood they bring in and to sort of see this tough period out. I know they've had an iffy year, sort of ups and downs, and even to have her around the place, I'd say, was a big help for a lot of players in there. Definitely the less experienced players. I think she's probably been the changing of a lot of their results. I would say that she's sort of behind the scenes a lot more than we would see. And yeah, to have her gone from the game as well is a huge loss. I think I'd say there was a lot of people in Galway thinking, oh, we might get her back for a year into the league here, but. No, I think should be a huge loss to Liverpool and to Ireland as well, obviously. And it's true, like legend of the game. And I think it's one of those that a lot of people don't really realise how much she's achieved, not only in football, but in all overall sport and Gaelic as well. Like she's really had it such a tremendous sporting career. And yeah, it's sad to see her go, but I think she can definitely leave with a lot of pride in what she's achieved.
100%. to look.
She's my favorite player ever that I've ever played with or watched. She's literally was the level for me. She's just on, off the pitch, how she conducts herself, how she is with people, the information she gives, how she reads the game, like the top tier. Like I said, I don't think she gets enough credit. So I'm just giving my little two cents there. The best.
Well, you've said this a lot, that we don't think Leif gets the credit that she deserves, you know, to be captain of one of the biggest clubs in the world, to have achieved the success that she has with them, to maintain such a high level at international as well, and be so reliant and dependable for so many years. You know, it's not an easy feat by any means, and to do it at a time when the game has changed so much from when she started to now, in terms of professionalism, in terms of the level that's expected of players, like, she's kept herself in there all the way through, and you can understand maybe now why she's decided to make the decision to kind of step away and to enter a new time of her life. But, you know, there has been no point where I suppose people have been questioning her presence on that Liverpool squad, which says a lot. To look at
the one that strike against Wales went in.
Oh, what a moment.
For a few months.
Yeah. Yeah, we would still have half our squad instead of half of them retiring.
True.
To look at that Arsenal game last night, which I would rather totally ignore that it happened at all. I was struck when I was watching it, once again, how similar Arsenal men and women are, in that they will put in these amazing performances that you don't expect, like say Champions League, the men against Real Madrid, and then it'll come to the league and they'll come up against a team that they should be beating and they just crumble. They just don't seem to be able to keep that level of high intensity. Scarlett, I know you were mentioning about like Kildante and how she was a bright spark in that squad, but it was hard. It was a hard watch, I would say, the rest of the pitch.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it was just sort of simple stuff. Obviously, to be fair to Brighton, they took their chances. They scored some absolute screamers. Even the first one's kind of simple. Like, Arsenal get caught out sort of deep in their own half, and Fran Kirby just curls one into like the very, very top corner. I actually don't think I've ever seen a more top corner strike. But that sort of set the tone for the game. And I know Arsenal got an equaliser shortly after, but Brighton showed what they were showing at the start of the year, and sort of the expectations we put on them, we kind of seen that in this game. And I know Arsenal weren't at their best, but I think credit has to go to Brighton for how they controlled the game and how they sort of went about it. They didn't hold anything back, and I think you could probably sense after the Villa game that they were probably a bit vulnerable and probably still in party mode, and it's just not a great curtain raiser for the next few weeks of their season. But I think as well, playing United this weekend, they could lose out on second place. I think they'll really have to approach that game as, we need to put full focus on this. And obviously United will be focused on their FA Cup game the week after as well. So both teams will have to go into this game with the mindset of, this is a preparation. I'd say we'll see the sides that will play in the finals probably as a bit of an opportunity to see how that will work. So I think we'll hopefully see the best of both teams, but I think neither team can afford to not show up on the day. I think it'll be big for momentum and for confidence going into their respective finals.
Yeah, to concede 9 goals in the last 2 games is concerning. And if you look at the table and goals against, Chelsea concede 13, Arsenal have conceded 23. So there's a 10 goal swing there. And that's the difference. It's not attacks that win leagues. It's their defence. And that will continue to be the difference between those two teams unless Arsenal address that somehow. Because, yeah, maybe their eye is off the ball. Maybe it's looking towards Barcelona, but they're going to be under a lot of pressure against Barcelona. They need to be defensively sound. And maybe they should have been, like Scarlett said, they'll have one game now as maybe a dress rehearsal for the Champions League final, but they should have been making it a habit over the last couple of games. And that's a mindset thing. Don't even think that probably comes from tactics or whatever. I think that the team themselves should have been more aware of their roles and getting in those habits and putting in those performances. But look, you're still hopeful that, look, there's loads of time between now and the Champions League final for them to get it right. I think this is certainly the kick up the arse they need to address anything like that now, because going to be a big task for that defense.
Yeah, I mean, I hope it is the kick that they need, but I don't have a lot of faith because I feel like they have been in this situation before and it hasn't made a difference. If anything, it's just got in on their heads even more and they haven't been able to push it over the line. Now, maybe this time will be different, but like you just cannot leave like an inch or even a quarter of inch of space against that Barcelona team to let them have any sort of in. And yes, this is probably a better squad than the one that has played them in previous years in the Champions League when they've been absolutely dominated, but I wouldn't say it's that much better. I mean, you look at how easily Barcelona were able to totally dismantle Chelsea, a team that Arsenal have like struggled against at times. Yeah, it doesn't leave a lot of room for optimism on my side.
Spoken like a true fan.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
there's time. There's time. It'll be fine.
Everything has to be terrible until it's not, Karen.
Okay. Oh, I know.
Elsewhere, we saw Chelsea with the completely changed side. There was like 9 changes in that team. Just slide past Tottenham to keep their winning in the league going. Obviously, we had Crystal Palace and Leicester that we chatted about earlier. Not all that much to play for in that game. We were kind of saying earlier in the season that that could be the one that maybe there would be a bit of excitement around in terms of a relegation battle. But we had the added benefit of getting an Abby Larkin goal, and the fact that she's getting more game time this season is brilliant. And then Aston Villa in a 5-goal thriller, they won 3-2 against West Ham. So there's actually a lot of goals this weekend. It was a good, sometimes I find the bank holiday games that for some reason they just feel less exciting, but that wasn't the case this weekend. Karen, Scarlett, thank you very much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure chatting about the football with you both. The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, official snack partner to Republic of Ireland women's national team. Next week is obviously the last weekend of the WSL, so we'll do a bit of a roundup for the season, even though, I mean, after this weekend, the league is finished. But sure, we'll have Man United Arsenal to entertain me and Karen at the very, very least. And then we have the international window coming up. So we still have a few more episodes left of the season in case anyone was worried. But for now, we will leave it there and we will chat to you all next week.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.